Today and welcome to the Pipeline of the Western Standard. Today is March 2024. I have written 23. I actually have gotten away without mistakes so far. I'm Derek Fildebrandt, publisher of the Western Standard. I'm joined by Western Standard opinion editor Nigel Hannaford. How are you, Nigel?
I am well. Good to be here.
And Western Standard senior Alberta columnist Corey Morgan.
Good as always.
Always.
Just a smiling ray of sunshine.
You know? You're always such a happy guy. Yes. Okay. All right, well, we've got good headlines for you today. Per Poilievre and the Conservatives hold a motion of non-confidence in the Liberal government and the carbon tax. Surprise, surprise, it did not pass and we're not having an election. It's not anti-Semitism if the government-funded Liberal media does it. La Presse, or La Stürmer, as I'm calling them now, put out a 1930s Nazi-style cartoon caricature of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that, we're going to show it to you. You don't need to be, you don't need a PhD in Holocaust studies to, when you look at this, to be, du riecht nicht gut. It does not smell good. Does not smell good at all. Former Calgary Mayor Naheed Nenshi leading the NDP leadership parade. No polls out yet, but all indications are that he's sort of the early front runner. But it's an interesting race. So we're going to talk about the NDP leadership race here. And speaking of Calgary mayors, Gondax, graffiti, Grand Tifa. Some grannies go out graffitiing some recall Gondak signs, not bothering to even cover their faces. So police investigating some anti-democratic graffiti going on. I guess, opposed to the efforts to recall Calgary Mayor Jody Gondek. All right. Well, let's start with the vote of non-confidence. I guess you could call it a stunt, but essentially, most things in Parliament, by all parties, are always stunts. But they're done with an intention. The Conservatives wanted, with April 1st, the carbon tax going up again. Even the Ontario Liberals opposed to a provincial carbon tax in Ontario now. Pretty much everybody other than Justin Trudeau and Stephen Guilbeau are off the carbon tax train. Carbon tax appears headed for a calamitous, you know, I think of the train at the end of Back to the Future 3 when it goes over the incomplete railroad tracks. That's where I feel like the carbon tax is headed right now. But Poilievre calls a motion of non-confidence in the government. Predictably, the NDP back it. I guess, are you surprised we're not having an election over the carbon tax right now?
Not in the least. The NDP don't have any money to go to war with, so it would be very much not in their interests to put themselves in the position of having to defend their point of view towards the general public. But speaking of the general public, I think the polls I saw this morning were something like 70% of Canadians are against the carbon tax.
This is against the carbon tax hike. I'm not sure if it's 70% against the carbon tax itself, but against the hiking
against the
and a solid plurality pushing majority are just against it, period.
Well, everybody understands how inflationary it is. So I'm not even sure that it's just the hike they're against, but certainly the idea that we're going to make everything from gasoline, home heating fuel, and groceries via the trucking industry, everything is going to be more expensive. People are fed up with it. We're broke already.
Corey, there was a, I'd say, about a close to 0% chance this motion of non-confidence would pass the House of Commons. Do you think, what do you think was the point of this for Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives?
Well, it's just a way to take over the news scroll. You know, you use your moment and strike at the underbelly of the Liberals where they're soft and vulnerable. As we're saying, you know, this is just not a popular tax, whether it's with other Canadians, whether it's with premiers, and Justin Trudeau is just choosing this as a hill to die on. So, you know, when they smell something that the Liberals are just fixated on, mm-hmm. that they're terribly unpopular with, they want to make sure that the Liberals are up there trying to defend this thing as much as possible, as often as possible. It's political brinkmanship, and it's smart political brinkmanship, because you're not getting anything else passed.
It very much ties the Liberals to the carbon tax.
Yeah, remind everybody.
Not that anybody doubted it, but it's a strong reminder.
Yeah.
So
and tying the NDP to it.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt Gurney at The Line had an interesting column today about you know, why the essential coalition agreement between the two is so disastrous for the NDP is previously when liberals become unpopular, people who get disaffected, they can go two ways. They can go to the NDP and they can go to the Conservatives. But if you voted liberal in the past and you're angry at the liberals, you can't go to the other liberal coalition partner. They're all going to the Conservatives now. So I think a lot of this is also about tying the NDP to it. Not just that tying the NDP to the liberals, but tying the NDP to the carbon tax and the carbon tax hike. You know, I'm not sure what the good moves are for the liberals right now. The carbon tax is grossly unpopular. But the one liberal retreat, the big liberal retreat we've seen from it, which was essentially meant for Atlantic Canada MPs who are in trouble, exempting home heating fuel, which is really just for Atlantic Canada, that did not help them. It made them look weak, made it look like they didn't believe in their own policy. It undermined their own policy. It undermined internal cohesion, angering Stephen Guilbeault, who, I guess to his credit, is not about the politics of this. He's just a fanatic who believes that paying the carbon tax will change the temperature. But, you know, the worry, I guess these battle terms, with a retreat is a retreat can quickly turn into a rout, yeah, where you're no longer organized and you're in a panicked, disorderly run. And that's where there's a lot of blood spilt. Should the Liberals stand by the carbon tax? I think if I'm advising Trudeau, he has to stand by it. He can't back away. It's been such a marquee policy for the Liberals. If they back away from it, I don't think they get any credit for it. I think they just look like they're trying to save their own skin. If just from the pure politics of it, Corey, if you're advising Justin Trudeau, do you tell him to scrap the carbon tax or stand by it?
I really don't know. He's dead either way. They lost that moral high ground, as you said, when they retreated a bit in the Maritimes. And as soon as they did that, you know, his sanctimonious speech when he was in Calgary, when Justin Trudeau said, you know, it's not my job to be popular, it's my job to do the right thing. Well, you don't have that case to be made when you will weaken your own signature tax for political expediency.
Well, that sounds like someone who's already lost, and he's just trying, kind of like Brian Mulroney, who left office extremely unpopular, who, you know, tried to work on legacy and how he's remembered in the history books. So, that sounded like someone more concerned about his legacy in the history books than someone who's actually even trying to keep in power.
Yeah, I can't see how they can extricate themselves. Either path, getting rid of it, they look weak, and it could turn into a rout. And standing by it, they're looking weak as well. He's in an untenable position. We're just waiting the clock out for the chance to get to an election. That's the reality of this.
You know, if there was an election this fall, Corey, he would really have no options. But the election, if they go the distance, is in October of 2025. Never underestimate the ability of the Canadian public to forget things. If he backed away from it now, he's got 18 months to rebuild his strategy, but I don't think that's actually what he's doing. It very much looks to me as though they know they're going to lose in 2025 with or without the carbon tax. So they are now in the business of doing everything that they ever wanted to do, knowing that it can't cost them any more than it's already going to cost them. And some of the things are going to be very hard to put back together again for the incoming government, whatever it is. So I think there's a, you know,
they're kind of like a cornered, starving bear right now. Like they're like a wounded animal, and that's what it's at its most dangerous. They don't seem to have.
They're flailing. They're like a
guy. They've already accepted death.
There's a famous story from British warfare where the fellow is cornered. He's standing beside a barrel of gunpowder with a loaded pistol. As the bad guys break through, he fires it, everybody dies. That's the takedown strategy.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of that and also just trying to write the history books for after this election. I mean, there's a lot of counting chickens before they're hatched here, but it just seems inconceivable that the Liberals pull it out at this point. They're so far down, so low.
I mean, some of it's just exhaustion with them, too. So it doesn't matter which policy, what, you know, they're past their expiry date, particularly Justin Trudeau. And, I mean, the tax is a flashpoint, but even if they got rid of that, I don't know if it would endear the public. As you said, never write anything off, especially with 18 months. But
I think their only play would be to have a new leader. I mean, worked in Alberta for like 40 years. You know, leader gets unpopular, dump him, get a new one. And it worked again. I mean, Kenny was down. The Conservatives in Alberta were down by the NDP here by pretty much as the Liberals are under the Conservatives federally. You know, a fresh coat of paint can do wonders, but I don't think the Liberal grassroots, if you can even call them, the Liberal rank and file, have quite the stomach for internal warfare that Alberta Conservatives have. Because that's Alberta Conservatives' favorite thing. That's our favorite thing to do.
Yeah, it's a specialty out here.
Who would they get?
Oh, it could be Freeland, it could be Carney.
So far, I am not reassured.
No, but Liberal voters might. I don't think you're the target of that.
I wonder.
Okay, well, we'll switch gears here. Speaking of Liberals, we'll talk about a Liberal newspaper, La Presse, you know, funded by the Liberal government. I think it's the main French language. If I'm not mistaken, it's the main French paper in Montreal.
It's the second largest French paper, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. It's one of the big ones in Quebec. Published, here, let's throw it up on the screen. So you'll see here, it is a cartoon caricature of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It's technically, I guess, a take on Nosferatu, a vampire from a movie in the 20s or something. But most of us don't recognize it for Nosferatu, the vampire. We recognize it because a guy named Julius Streicher, amongst the most extreme of the extreme anti-Semitic Nazis, grasped onto this and used it as a kind of new, more modern caricature of the blood-sucking Jew and the vampire. Oh, man, this is going to set off the algorithms. the vampiric caricature image. And this became one of the main anti-Semitic caricatures of Jews in the 1930s and 40s. And so I didn't recognize it for Nosferatu. I recognize it as a very recognizable genre of anti-Semitic caricature cartoons that we all know. Now, Nigel, you worked at the Calgary Herald for quite a while as the on the editorial board. If this came across your desk from the cartoon section, what would be your first thought? Is this something would it cross your mind that would you recognize this as Nazi style anti-Semitic propaganda?
I would have recoiled from the screen in horror. That you just don't do that sort of thing. That's gosh, we can cartoons for much less than that, and extremely sensitive to any portrayal that could be taken as negative in regards to race or religion. This is sensitive to neither, and I cannot imagine the thought process of the people who let that through. First, the guy who came up, and then the city desk. Passed it through, and they probably were quite surprised at the reaction, and that's what I find truly upsetting about the whole thing. Like, when did that become okay? Because it wasn't okay, and I don't think 10 years ago that would have been okay in La Presse, but today it is.
I don't think it would have been fine 2 years ago.
Well, probably not. But at any rate, the thing is, something has changed, and now it's okay to be anti-Semitic, and you see it everywhere. You see it in the Liberal Party as they take a vote to support an NDP motion. Most of them voted for it.
Oh, yeah, we'll get into that in a little bit.
But this is bad.
So Liberal Propaganda Minister Saint-Ange, she's in charge of the press in Canada and pays the press to do the Liberals' biddings here. She was called upon, obviously, as the minister who controls the press in Canada to condemn a blatantly anti-Semitic cartoon taken straight out of the pages of Der Stürmer, the most extreme of a Nazi paper that was so outrageous that even many Nazis found it offensive. But taken straight out of the pages of Der Stürmer.
Yeah, that's the sort of stuff they put in it. Yeah.
Yeah, like extreme even for the Nazis was Der Stürmer story. So crazy. She refused to condemn it repeatedly until La Presse, recognized that, maybe the being Lachstumer was a bad look. Then she issued a pretty soft statement. I'm glad it came down and anti-Semitism is bad. Nothing like, holy crap, I can't believe this got into a government-funded newspaper. What the hell's going on? Nothing like that.
Watch us defund it.
Yeah. No talk about defunding this, because it's not anti-Semitism when liberals do it, eh?
Apparently not. And some people have already seen trying weekly to make the case. It wasn't after Jews. It was after Netanyahu. Netanyahu's open game. Absolutely.
There's he's boltish.
Many people in Israel have little use for Netanyahu as well.
Yep.
But with his face, and it was a clumsy one. I saw that in the newsroom with the original Nosferatu next to the one they made. All this person did was clipped a cartoon image of Netanyahu and smack it right onto the face. Otherwise, it was exactly the same. If it wasn't a 100-year-old image, it might be considered plagiarism. But I mean, it should have jumped right on. Plus, it had the excessive bulbous nose and the rest as well. I mean, if you took any other race and grossly exaggerated their features in cartoons, as used to be the norm, an Asian person with eyes or a black person and blew up the lips, there's going to be outrage, and there should be.
Keep talking about your caricatures of other races.
Yeah. I'm talking about what used to be done, though. And that's the thing. The world has gotten to a place where we don't accept that sort of caricature anymore. Yet that warranted multiple pushes on the minister to even condemn it. Where are we right now?
I wonder if Justin Trudeau's ever dressed up as a Jew. Like kaftan and locks and stuff like that. What have Justin Trudeau's ever done?
I don't think I've seen that one yet. I mean, we've seen him with a kippah on a few times, but that's typically a sign of respect.
You can do that. But yeah. I wonder if he's gone like old fashioned caricature Jew.
We'll keep looking.
Yeah. This comes right on the heels of an NDP motion passed with some liberal amendments in the House of Commons to recognize State of Palestine. And, I think there should be a state of Palestine. There are Palestinians. Palestine is not a nation in the traditional sense, but I guess neither is Canada. Most of the Arab states of the Middle East are all kind of arbitrarily drawn around imperial Sykes-Picot agreement in the First World War, to divide up the Ottoman Empire. None of the borders in the Middle East really make much, all that
they're
much
pretty
sense.
Pretty fluid.
And they're all kind of drawn by Europeans. Like, they don't make sense. But nonetheless, the people there, if they want to have a state, they have a right to self-determination. But Israel also has a right, it does not need to recognize a nation that's bent on its genocide. So Canada now officially recognizes a state of Palestine. The question to me is, which state of Palestine? Because there are two Palestinian states. There is, and both of them generally claim the whole territory of Israel in that state. But there is one Palestinian state based in Gaza run by Hamas, which are full-time genocidal maniacs. And then there is a other state of Palestine based in the West Bank run by the Palestinian Authority, which are part-time genocidal maniacs. It's
Hezbollah's turf where they still meddle around it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but on the spectrum, I guess they're not 100% of the time genocidal. They're like 75%, So they're,
soft genocide.
Soft genocide. Yeah. But there are two Israeli states. So I guess this raises the question, which Palestinian state do we recognize as legitimate?
Well, that's half the problem. I guess even just if we're going to look at the geographic setup. Because, yes, it's split on each side. One's on the other side of Israel and one's next to the ocean. That's part of why, though, the genocidal ones chant that odious from the river to the sea. Because it's the river and it's the sea.
And they want everything in between.
They want the middle. They want Israel. And that's where it's getting tiresome, where Israel's constantly being condemned for not supporting a multi-state solution. They're not the ones who've been fighting it. They've tried. They gave them at least some self-determination in Gaza. They gave them the West Bank, and in return, they've gotten missiles. Should we pursue such a solution? Sure, because this thing is never ending. It just seems to keep going. But the condemnation, as we saw in Parliament and things like that, it's always going after Israel, not Hamas and the others who are chanting on wipe out every Jew and take Israel. Like, guys, you've got it backwards. And yet again, it's...
Well, then there is fair criticisms, not just of Netanyahu, but like Israeli government policy. Like, there are illegal settler colonies outside of Israel in the West Bank and things like that. Outside of Israel's recognized legitimate borders, they've got some settlers.
Some valid disputes.
Yeah, like those should not be there. Those are a violation. Those are imperialist policies, and that's fair game to touch. I used to be kind of one of these hardcore Israel could do no wrong guys. I'm not that anymore. They're a state, they're a government, and they could do wrong just like any other state and government, which means they will do wrong. And that stuff's fair, but there's just no balance from the liberal. You know, the NDP has been infiltrated by Islamists, anti-West Islamists for a long time, so this is not surprising from them. But the liberals have completely abandoned, the Liberal Party used to be the traditional home of Jews in Canada. They very much do not seem to be anymore, Nigel.
That's quite so. Look, the settlements aren't the issue. If you go back in the history of that area, there was a vicious pogrom in 1925. There were no settlements. There was another one in 1934. Mm-hmm. There were no settlements. I could go through these significant
Oh, they're
going
to want to kill the Jews, settlements or not. I'm saying it's legitimate for Canada to criticize the settlements because they are illegal. They should not be there. Yeah. But they could get rid of the settlements tomorrow, and they'll still try to kill all the Jews.
Well, and that's where I was going with this. The in 2006, when the Israelis withdrew from Gaza, they took with them the settlements mm-hmm. that had been established. By the way, they don't sort of imperialistically take these things. People go in and buy their land, and then they build on it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was going to be a problem, so they took the settlements out. The settlements never have been and never will be the problem. The problem is the sheer race hatred of the people in Gaza for the people on the other side of the wire, the Israelis. And it is part of the Hamas charter that Israel has to be destroyed, with it, the people in it. So until such time as that group of people accepts that the Israel is going to exist, there is going to continue to be strife and warfare. Can't be any other way, unless people think, and maybe this is what the liberals now do think, is that Israel should just sort of quietly fold up shop and everybody leave and hand the keys over to other people, to Hamas. If that's what they think, then perhaps. But as long as
I think the liberals have emerged a white guilt naive worldview that if you know the Israelis, I don't know, just had a happier face that. The Palestinians would then make peace and would hold hands. I think the liberals have a naive... The NDP, I think, is more in on the quiet, don't say genocide out loud part. I think a lot of New Democrats do not view Israel as a legitimate state and nation. I think the liberals just have a more naive view that peace can break out if the Israelis just do something.
And also, the problem, I mean, if there's this two-state solution, if ever there will be such a solution, fine, we can talk about it, we can make motions for it. Mm-hmm. The problem wasn't so much the liberals calling for or acknowledging a two-state solution, but they're essentially saying that Hamas is a legitimate authority within that two-state solution. Yeah. They're talking as if you can negotiate with Hamas, as if they were a government you could speak with, and that they're backing away from what most of the world recognizes. They're terrorists, they're unreasonable, they want to kill every Jew. We could talk with Palestine and the Palestine Authority, but you cannot talk with Hamas. Nothing's going to happen as long as Hamas is in power and the liberals are afraid to say they have to be wiped out. And that's what that motion sort of did. It gave them legitimacy.
And equated Hamas with Israel as if there's any equivalency between the two.
And you can't compare those.
Okay.
Funny we should meet in the middle here because I wasn't always uncritical of Israel. But, I think what I saw on October the 7th changed my mind forever on that.
It hurt me back into that direction. I had been moving in the direction of a lot more balance in it. But, you know, I there is still a lot Israel does wrong and can fix. But I don't think any of that is going to get the genocidal maniacs that want to kill them all to stop being genocidal maniacs wanting to kill them all.
Yeah.
Okay, a little less extreme here. Speaking of New Democrats, Alberta's New Democrats are having a leadership race. Six candidates. We've got Naheed Nenshi, former Calgary mayor, Sarah Hoffman, Kathleen Ganley, Rocky Pancholi, Gil McGowan,
Jody Calhoun Stonehouse.
Yeah, I could. That was the name I wasn't going to get. Yeah. There's six here. The four women are in the NDP caucus, and the two men are not. So Nenshi is the real outsider in this race, I think. He's not a lifelong New Democrat. And we've chatted here before that the NDP has a very different culture than most other political parties in Canada. You know, parties like it if you've been around for a while, but they will sometimes, especially conservatives, like an outsider, disruptor. You know, it's not unusual for someone who's not ever been elected to come in and become the leader and, you know, become prime minister, become premier. The NDP is not like that. You're expected to pay your dues. And Nenshi has not. But he's by far the biggest name media-wise to come in. I haven't seen any internal polling yet on the NDP leadership race, so it's really hard to say. But is it fair to say that Nenshi is the front runner just based on the amount of media attention that he's managed to garner versus the others?
I don't know if I'll go that far yet, because we've got to remember this is a leadership race, not a general race. So when we're talking about active memberships already, which and selling new ones, I noticed that Gil McGowan hasn't stepped down from the AFL. He's still putting out releases in his name. Mm-hmm. He still has the ear of hundreds of thousands of unions.
Well, Gil has no chance of winning.
Well, when we're talking memberships,
New Democrats don't even like him.
Yeah, I understand. But, you know, he's got access to a lot of memberships. The other thing is, too, with the other four women who are suddenly the also-rans in this, they've been pushed aside. And women within the party and those women themselves might not be too thrilled, but the two men came in and said, come on, girls, now we're going to take this over for you. But I could see them rallying around one. If Nenshi doesn't win it in the first ballot, I don't see him being a popular second choice for the NDP types either. He'll sell a lot of new memberships. Absolutely. He can't be underestimated. And that's what he has to do is get new people to buy
the
memberships.
The NDP chose an intentionally short leadership race period where you could sell memberships, I think intentionally to stop outsiders like him.
Well, that's it. Given enough time and enough work on the ground, yeah, I think he could wipe them off that electoral map. But right now, he's got a lot of memberships to sell. And there's still a good base of memberships that I don't think will accept him as a second choice, much less a first one. So the race is not done yet, though they're calling him the considered a front runner at this point. Maybe he is, but I wouldn't call it in the bag by any means yet.
Yeah. Nigel, do you think it's fair to, like, media coverage-wise, I mean, if we're just doing a poll based on media hits, he's far and away the front runner. But it's definitely not in the bag because, you know, I'd say New Democrats who prize winning the most are probably going to lean to him because, I mean, he might sell better than another hardcore downtown and Edmonton socialist. You know, guys, the NDP knows it needs to win in Calgary. And a guy who's won in Calgary before, you know, there's an appeal of that. But, I don't think he's necessarily earned the trust of more longtime New Democrats who are true believer socialists. Do you think it's fair to say he's the front runner, though?
No.
Is there a front runner?
No, I don't. I have no access to their internal polling, so I can't say for sure. But what I can say is what we have been reporting is that, first of all, even if he were to win, that doesn't mean that the NDP is going to win. Now, we can't predict the outcome of an election in 3 years' time, but the polling that was taken last week, would you prefer an NDP government led by Naheed Nenshi to a continuation of a UCP government led by Danielle Smith? He did not win. He did not even come close to touching her lead. So it's not like he's magic if they can only get him across the line. Mm-hmm. And one of the real difficulties that he faces is this very lack of long-term paying my dues. Are they so cynical? Remember, this is the NDP we're talking about, not the progressive conservatives of old. Are they so cynical that they would take anybody who could just guarantee that they were, or offered a guarantee that they would win the next election? I think they're a little more calculated than that. These are people who dig deep into their own pockets to fund the party, unlike some other parties. They care very much about principle, and they care about policy. Hate their policies, despise their principles, but they do have them, and they mean a lot to them. And I'm not sure that somebody who can just say, oh, I can be that if you want me to. I was with the Alberta Party years ago, but, you know, And I could be a liberal if there was a little more opportunity. But this looks like a something I could do. Yeah, I'll be your leader.
It does look very opportunistic.
That is just anathema to the hardcore NDP. So he's going to need to recruit a lot of non-hardcore NDPs if he's going to get anywhere. Maybe he can do it, but I don't think he's too early to tell anybody that he's the front runner. If I were actually asked right now to say who I would imagine taking the top spot, I would probably say it would be either Kathleen Ganley or Sarah Hoffman. They very much will appeal to the existing NDP base.
I think similar. There's some similarities and some differences from the last UCP leadership race. You know, Smith was the big outsider, not a member of caucus, the disruptor coming in. But she ran as the right candidate. She ran to the right of pretty much everyone except, you know, Todd Lowen was kind of in the shared kind of space. But she ran as the most conservative, the most libertarian, the freedom candidate as the outsider. Nenshi is the outsider here, not a member of caucus, etc. But he's not running as the most radically left-wing candidate. He's running to be center-left instead of
he's running
left.
To be whatever you want him to be.
Yeah, and so that's what marks him off from Smith. Yeah. Smith was an outsider, but she came in as a kind of a crusader. I'm here to take down the establishment of the Conservative Party and undo the bad that's been done over the last few years. Make conservatives conservative again. Nenshi isn't coming in saying, I'm going to make the NDP real socialists again. He's, you know, by extension, making him a little less social. Still socialist, but a little less. That's not very motivating. I think, do you think the big motivating factor for him is his appeal that I can win in Calgary, these other guys can't, and Daniel Smith's bad, we got to get rid of him.
Yeah, members have a pragmatism versus principle choice to make. You know, if you want to make that pragmatic choice and hope that's the only way that we could win full power, or do we just accept that either we could win on our bare socialist principles or be a principled opposition, and are we comfortable with that? That's really what has to go through their minds right now. And we'll see what happens. As you said, they're a different sort of party. These are ideologues, a lot of the base supporters, the members. These guys aren't much on pragmatism quite often.
But then she's trying to bring in those more...
Well, and he's selling new memberships. Like I you know, the nomination that I lost when I ran years ago for the Wild Rose, I started campaigning to the existing membership. I learned a good hard lesson there. And I did very well with that. But then a new contender came on, and he sold a whole whack of brand new memberships. And I tell you, the rate of being able to convert somebody else's membership sales, nearly impossible. When I lost the nomination handily. But when we dissected the numbers later, too, I had like 70% support among the existing members prior, but it meant nothing when new memberships come in and wipe me off there. And that's what Nenshi's strategy has to be. He has to bring in the new ones. And if he brings them in, the other contenders will have a hard time trying to swing them.
Mind you, they're going to be selling new memberships as well.
Them as well, yes.
And we keep saying that Nenshi's got an organization, which he does. So do they.
Yeah.
All right, well, kind of sticking with the theme of Calgary mayors, there's the Recall Gone Debt campaign. We've talked about it. It's got a near 0% chance of success because you need more than you need 500,000 to 600,000 signatures in Calgary in like a short... like a 2-month period of time. It's just logistically not possible in a city the size of Calgary. If we were talking about Brooks, even then that'd be difficult. But you could do it on something the scale of Brooks if you had a really unpopular mayor. But you couldn't even do it for Medicine Hat or Red Deer, let alone Calgary or Edmonton. It's just, it's not
an absurd bar.
Yeah. So, but it's taking place nonetheless. And, you know, there's you drive down Memorial and stuff, and you're going to see some Recall Gone Debt on it. And okay, I mean, it's not a ton of them, but it's a small campaign. He's putting some stuff up. But video, you know, let's actually show the grannies out vandalizing the signs from Recall Gone Debt into Respect Gone Debt. Okay, I mean, fine. But what surprises me is that they're making zero effort at all to hide their identities because they're clearly committing a criminal act. This is it's vandalism and, you know, and by extension, anti-democratic to to do this kind of thing. I think sign vandalism happens at every campaign.
It's usually in the dark of night, though.
Thank you. And yeah, yeah, you're, that, that's where you're supposed to do it. I remember I saw a video in Trump's first presidential campaign. Someone tipped on vandalizing this Trump sign in the yard, and a guy electrified it. It's a great video. The guy comes to steal the sign, and I mean, it's a very American, very Texas way of dealing with a political vandal. But yes, the police are now finally investigating. It shouldn't be that hard to get these guys on.
They just
I haven't even seen Gondek condemn this.
Apparently, she put it up on her own Facebook page. One of them. Huh?
Yeah, I believe they've been identified. Yeah. That so we'll see.
She put it up on her own Facebook page.
Yeah, they're quite proud of it.
Will the Calgary City Police prosecute?
They're going to get a ticket.
I think they have to.
They have to. I mean, you know, we're not talking about they're not going to slap the cuffs on them, throw them in jail, but I could most certainly see a, you know, this is the realm of a police officer certainly giving a stern talking to on the seriousness of it and issuing a fine, you know, for vandalism, a minor offense, but saying, you know, no, this is not acceptable. I mean, I know some people are screaming it was a breach of the Elections Act and they should be in jail. That's not going to happen. But I don't think they can leave it alone. Not when it's this bold.
No.
Well, it's an interesting difference of tactic. You know, during the, we were talking about this before, but during the last provincial election, they had that big, the NDP had the big signs up saying,
yeah, like, what will she do next?
Yeah, yeah. And then somebody came along and said, well, lower taxes and various other things. Thing was, they don't actually write that on somebody else's sign.
Yeah.
They put their own sign in front of it.
Yeah.
So that you could
touch the other person's sign. If they wanted to stand and wave signs in front of it saying respect Gondek or block the sign,
they could
go ahead or even put their own signs in. I mean, I remember instructing that when managing other campaigns with volunteers and everything. They'd say, never, ever, ever lay your hands on the other person's signs, even if they put the sign somewhere illegally, even if it fell down and you're looking to stand it up. Because a picture of you with your hands on their sign, and you've got a catastrophe. And these two ladies, they didn't care.
It used to be considered bad form to vandalize the other side's signs.
Yeah.
Anti-democratic.
Yeah. And petty. It's
You had George Chahal, remember? Porch Pirate Chahal.
Yeah.
Video footage of him, a liberal MP, never kicked out of caucus for it, stealing conservative literature off at the doors. Doorbell cams caught him. I mean, the candidate himself doing.
Yeah,
I mean like, it's one thing for your volunteers to do that.
The combination of the pettiness and the stupidity of it. I mean, the amount of scandal you just embraced over, what, stealing some flyers? Do you think that was the edge that was going to bring you over in the election?
Yeah.
And it shows the madness some people get into, I guess, in politics.
You know, I got to say this takes me back a little bit. And I've covered my fair share of protests and riots and things like that, especially when I lived in British Columbia. Well, the only time that I've ever been even moderately concerned for my own safety was when the raging grannies were present. You have never seen a more angry and violent and
self-righteous.
Beat you over the head with their sign. Well, those guys, you know. Now we've got, what did you call them?
Grantifa. How was Michelle during your meeting before the show?
Yeah, so Grantifa is out there on the warpath, I think.
Let's put that image up. Michelle had a great AI-generated image of Grantifa. So this is an AI image. This is not real raging grannies, but we had an AI-generated image of Antifa-style grannies, so we call it Grantifa. Let's put that up.
But I mean, that's it. And it is almost disturbing, though, how they were grinning while somebody else is filming them. The self-righteousness of it, the feeling that their moral authority is so high they can vandalize the property of others.
Have we seen Gondek even at least condemn it?
Nothing yet. I would guess she'll just say stay silent.
Oh, let's just touch on this before we wrap up here. So Mount Royal University professor.
Dwayne Bratt.
Yes.
Never seen a man short of Nenshi who is so convinced he's right about everything. He got some letter, I guess, on the Recall Gondek campaign, and he's like, I've got the smoking gun. Take back Alberta is running it all, and it's all connected. The guy sees a David Parker under every bed. You know, like, you look open the closet.
David only wishes he had that much control.
Yeah, I mean, you know you're stroking David Parker's ego when you think that everything going on is, you know, he's pulling the strings everywhere. I mean, it's It's laughable, the degree to which they're convinced this happens. Anyway, it turns out, a surprise, to be completely not true, and Dwayne Brett's deleted it. But I
CTV reported on it. They gave it airtime.
Yeah.
The evening news. Like, man.
You know, I wish I could be as certain of anything as Mr. Brett is certain of everything.
Yeah, it's a comfortable place to be, I guess.
Well, boy.
I guess we've only got a couple minutes here, but what is driving this belief among the media class, the academia here, that David Parker, Take Back Alberta, is behind everything?
Well, I think part of it is, as we know and as I know, David can be pretty abrasive, put it politely. He chafes a lot of people. They're looking for a weak spot.
But why do they think he's behind it?
I don't even know if they think he's behind it, but they're looking for a weak spot in Premier Smith's armor. People like Premier Smith, but they don't like the idea, perhaps, that somebody else is in there and controlling things and pulling levers. So they're hoping to entrench that feeling among people that something's going on behind the scenes, and they want to feed that. I don't even know if they themselves believe that that's what's happening, but I think some people want to feed that narrative because they think it's a way to undercut the existing government.
Well, there's that, and then, of course, there's the media fascination with conflict. Mm-hmm. And as you said, David says some odd things sometimes.
Klein said, you're fight promoters. Fair enough. Like,
all of our
topics today have been, yeah, we're kind of a political Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that'd be good. Yeah. All right, well, we're going to have to wrap it up there. We're out of time. Nigel, Corey, thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
And thank all of you for joining us today. If you're not yet a member of the Western Standard, make sure to go to westernstandard.news right now and sign up. It's only $10 a month or $100 a year for unlimited access to all Western Standard content, supporting one of the very last non-government funded media left in Canada. Thank you for joining us today, and God bless. Canadian Shooting Sports Association. Without the CSSA, our gun rights would have been taken long, long ago. These guys are on the front lines, helping to draft smart and intelligent firearms regulations and legislation in Canada, and more importantly, educating the public about how we keep guns out of the hands of the wrong people. To become a member, it's absolutely worth every penny. You can become a Western Standard member for just $10 a month, or $99 a year for unlimited access.